And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing?
Yes, good
Phil?
Afternoon, Phil.
And today we're going to talk to Eve Engler, author of The Ugly Canadian and Stephen Harper's Foreign Policy. Eve has written an article for The Tie. It's titled Canada as Global Bully, the Congo Example. There's a very ugly story. We've been talking about it off and on in this program about what is unfolding in the Congo, particularly the nasty role played by Uganda and Rwanda with a big friend in Washington who's helping them. And a great deal of strife has been brought to the eastern Congo. And so we'll talk to Eve about his article in the Taiyi. And we will also be talking with him about the news from the Middle East. There's been some interesting political activity in Canada in resistance to the attacks on Gaza, but also the new moves regarding Syria. And so we're going to ask Eve Engler about that. We're also going to talk to Zafar Bengash. Our listeners will know Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net, is an authority on the Middle East. He's traveled everywhere in the region, knows all the leaders, some of them personally, and we need his expertise to sort out what is going on in the Gaza and also at the United Nations, and of course the latest development of NATO providing weaponry to Turkey of a type that is bound to lead to further trouble. So that's the format today. I have an announcement I want to make sure I make right now, which is that on 22nd December, Saturday at 7 p.m., there's going to be a fundraiser for Hurricane Sandy relief for Cuba. Cuba was very hard hit. We know the United States East Coast, particularly Jersey Shore, was heavily hit. Cuba is a very poor country, but it's very together, very organized, and they've survived some tremendous hurricanes. But they do need help, and so there is this fundraising effort. Come and enjoy the internationally acclaimed play by Brian Gordon Sinclair, drama and humor. And A Love of Cuba, and that's the Royal Theater at 608 College Street, Saturday, December 22nd at 7 p.m., 608 College Street. That's west of Bathurst, and there's $25, which is a very reasonable price for fundraising to assist Hurricane, the relief for Cuba for the devastation caused by Hurricane Sandy. You can call for information at CCFA Toronto, 905-951-8499. That's the number is 905-951-8499. And you can also send a check to CCFA Toronto to Post Office Box 99051. 1245 DuPont Street. That's P.O. Box 99051, 1245 DuPont Street in Toronto. That's on Toronto, Ontario, M6H2A0. M6H2A0. And you can also get tickets for this for Saturday's event at Soundscapes at 572 College Street. And it's an all-ages event. And again, the date is Saturday the 22nd, 7 p.m. for the play by Brian Gordon Sinclair. We interviewed Brian Gordon Sinclair, by the way, on this program. He's an expert on and represents Ernest Hemingway, if I recall rightly. And it's... the title is Drama and Humor and a Love of Cuba. And he has just returned, I'm told, from Cuba. Again, the phone number you can call is 905-951-8499. 99. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We are at taylor-report.com for our previous programs. And, of course, you can write to us, taylor at CIUT.fm. And, Phil, you have a program coming up tomorrow.
Tomorrow on Classical Underground at 12 noon here at CIUT. We're acknowledging, we're celebrating the presence in Toronto of a major exhibit of the works of Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo. And I have to say, this is not the Frida Kahlo of Hollywood. This is the real Frida Kahlo. It's a very fine exhibit. So we are programming some music by two Mexican composers who were contemporaries of Rivera and supporters of the Mexican Revolution, Silvestre Revueltas and Carlos Chavez. Mm-hmm. These are major names in Mexico, but their music is rarely performed on the concert stage outside of Mexico. That is beginning to change a little bit because of Dudamel and the Venezuelan phenomenon, because Dudamel has been promoting Revueltas' music. Revueltas is a major cultural figure in Mexico, unfortunately died very young, lost his job with the orchestra in Mexico City when politics changed, and ended up on the street, actually, which is where he died.
Really?
Yeah. Well, those things happen. Yeah. But these are two fine composers whose music deserves to be heard, and we're going to have feature their music tomorrow on Classical Underground, 12 noon to 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. We are going to be, as I said, we'll be talking after a while with Eve Engler. And his article, by the way, is in the journal is at the internet. If you go on the net, it's Tai E. Now that I've said that, I've dropped my link here. But we will have it when we come up. But people know Tai T-Y-E-E, and you'll get to it. Canada is the global bully, the Congo example. I'm going to introduce a topic I may have to come back to. We'll just see. But just say that there was an important fight on the weekend, which has got a lot of politics in it and a lot of strange, and the issue of what's gone wrong with major sport. We just had the story of Mr. Lance Armstrong. We've had the baseball players. And we had a great scandal called the Balco scandal, where they identified a number of coaches and athletes who had been illegally taking these substances. What they call performance-enhancing drugs. So a very famous figure from the scandals has emerged in the backdrop to the Pacquiao fight with Mr. Marquez. But I think we have Eve Engler, so I'm going to just leave that dangling and just tell you that a man involved with Balco is really involved with Mr. Marquez. So we'll talk about that later. We have, by the way, a famous athlete, Eve Engler, who's not just an author. The man used to play a lot of quality hockey. Are you there, Eve?
How's it going, Phil?
Not bad. By the way, Eve, I don't mean to take advantage of you, but do you ever give thought to write on this issue? Because you were a great athlete, by all accounts, and maybe you still are, but do you ever comment on or take an interest in people like Armstrong and others who take advantage of their fellow athletes?
I don't know about back to. I'm not sure if I was ever a great athlete. I was an okay athlete.
Well, we're promoting you now.
Previous steps. I'm not familiar with what's the specifics with Armstrong.
I mean, just the whole phenomenon of drugs in sports. I just wondered. I just thought I'd draw on that experience with you. I know that some hockey players have talked about it. It's come in. But I thought, well, as somebody writes about these things, you might have touched on it. I don't mean to put the issue.
I have. I remember being 18 and having teammates who were taking those whatever they're called, the stimulants there during intermission and stuff like that. And I understand that today it's that much more down, that much more different kind of drugs that people are taking, but. I think it's the pressure and the over glorification of something that, well, I think sports are really good for kids to play, and I consider very enjoyable to watch, but yeah. there's way too much sort of societal emphasis put on this, what is ultimately, you know, should be mostly something for people to get exercise doing.
Yeah. Yeah, they need real exercise as opposed to, I guess, they kind of transform them. Anyway, well, thank you for that. You have written in the Tai'i. By the way, I've got to learn how to pronounce this. Is it Tai'i? Is that how it's
pronounced? I believe so.
Yeah. And today, titled Canada as a Global Bully, the Congo Example. And its the subtitle is Our Shifting Foreign Policy and Aid Aims Are on Ugly Display in the World's Poorest Country. Can you outline what's your case there? What's going on that Canada has a role in the Congo?
Well, I just kind of run through a bit of the sort of government's response to the what is effectively a Rwandan invasion or reinvasion of the east of the Congo. And the Conservative government has taken a very sort of ambivalent position in its public statements on the Foreign Affairs website, and you know, sort of generally gone along with Rwanda's with a little bit of Ugandan involvement invasion, and you know, in the backdrop of this are major Canadian mining interests in the Congo, and a position of ambivalence to somewhere between ambivalence to hostility towards the Kabila government in Kinshasa. Yeah. And
you make an excellent point in the article that I was very struck by, that the Canadian government chose to make comments, and I think the Prime Minister himself, disparaging comments about what the democratic process in Congo, where they had a closely fought, I think everybody agrees, by the way, it was a, you know, the country participated, closely fought election where the differences between winner and loser weren't that big. And our government was very nasty and cast aspersions on Mr. Kabila. But the government of Rwanda, they had an election, and it wasn't exactly a hard-fought campaign. And what happened there?
No, and in that case, the press release that Foreign Affairs put out afterwards, the first paragraph is devoted to praising Rwandans for their democratic activities, and it mentions how Canada actually supported the election process there. And then it goes into a criticism of the lack of democracy. I mean, it doesn't say it like that, but, you know, then it goes into something, you know, it sort of speaks to, you know, that this was a total, what happened in Rwanda is, you know, there's no independent media, there's no allowance for opposition parties, you know, and so sort of mild criticism of that. But for somebody reading it, if you look at these things in isolation, they might stand off as being sort of somewhat reasonable. But when you look at it as part of something bigger and you say, hey, why has there been so much attention on the lack of democratic credentials in the Congo for Kabila versus, you know, the instance of Rwanda? And then you find out that there's, you know, the Harper government's not so happy about Kabila's policy on some Canadian mining companies, and you say maybe that has a little bit to do with the overemphasis there.
Could you enlarge upon that? Your article does go into that, and I want people to know this is Eve Engler, and you go to the Tai'i site for his article. But the Congolese government, and that's a sovereign country, they made a decision about what they wanted to do with their mines, and the company wasn't happy, and for some reason that meant our government wasn't. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, Congo is an immensely rich in natural resources. One estimate has it saying as many as $24 trillion, worth of mineral resources in the Congo. And the Kabila government had done a review of many of the mining concessions that had been acquired, a lot of which were acquired during the 1998 to 2003 multi-country war, A lot of them acquired under fairly dubious sort of circumstances. And they did a review of all those. And in the process, there was greater requests made of a Canadian mining company, First Quantum. First Quantum balked. The Congolese government rescinded First Quantum's concession. And the Harper government immediately went to back for First Quantum. They tried to stop Paris Club of Debtor Nations debt forgiveness for the Congo.
I mean, that's very punitive, isn't it?
Incredibly punitive. I mean, that's an example of extreme defense of Canadian mining company.
You're a poor country, and we're going to hurt you and make you poorer.
Basically, and this was debt that was accrued during mostly during the Mobutu dictatorship, was accrued during the 5-country war, the 5-year war between 1998 and 2003. You know, clearly odious debt that all the other members of the Paris Club of Debtor Nations had agreed to forgive. And these aren't, you know, these are mostly, you know, U.S., France, Germany. These aren't countries that tend to be too inclined towards such things. And you had the Harper government explicitly holding up the debt forgiveness because of the position of First Quantum. Then they took the issue to the 2010 G8 forum, got a whole paragraph in the final declaration of the G8 forum criticizing the Congo for its treatment of foreign mining companies, brought the issue to the World Bank, the IMF. Recently, when Harper was in Kinshasa for the Francophonie Summit in October, he went out of his way again to criticize the treatment of foreign companies in the natural resource sector. So, you know, a serious campaign. I would presume there's more to this campaign that we don't even know about yet. But what we know about already is you know, a sign of pretty extreme support for Canadian Mining Company. And it should be also noted that First Quantum acquired their concessions in the Congo in very dubious circumstances. They're actually cited in a 2002 UN report of having paid bribes and kickbacks to government officials to get their concession. So, you know, despite the company being, cited in a UN report having got their concession in very dubious circumstances, the conservatives were there to back them up, no matter what the consequences for the majority of Congolese.
Yeah. And by the way, these Canadian companies that the Canadian government is willing to harm another country in order to assist, do they then tax them very heavily and share the wealth with the fellow Canadians?
No, I don't think they do that.
How come we have to be the soldiers?
No, I mean, that's one of the reasons why so many of these companies are based in Canada, right? Is because the tax rates and the ability to divert their money to different tax havens and because they, you know, such lax rules in terms of being able to be pursued in Canadian courts, and also you have a Canadian government that is, you know, so oriented towards advancing the interests of mining companies. I think there's very limited benefit that comes to most Canadians in this whole process.
It is invoked, all this power is invoked in our name. But it's just for a handful of guys who seem to know the prime minister.
Yeah, I would go a little. You know, it's beyond just the companies themselves. There are, you know, Canadian banks do profit from this. Canadian banks are tied in. There's, you know, law firms that are tied into all this. So there is a significant strata of corporate Canada and the investor class that is very much committed to the mining sector and makes a lot of money off of it. But how much of that makes its way down to the majority of Canadians, I think, is certainly up for discussion.
Yeah. This is Eve Engler. The article is in the TAI.ca, Canada as Global Bully, the Congo example. And Eve is the author of The Ugly Canadian, Stephen Harper's Foreign Policy. And now, Eve, I want to make sure I ask you about this. The big issues, the front page today is pages of the last week have been about two subjects in the Middle East, Syria, the bringing of NATO weaponry to that border, the Turkish-Syrian border, And then there's been a lot of talk about Gaza and the reaction to the heavy Israeli assault on Gaza, aerial assault and missiles, etc. But you alerted me to something. Many Canadians, peace movement people, others demonstrated. But something happened in the Quebec National Assembly that I don't think many people are talking about. Could you tell us what they did there or said that probably most Canadians haven't heard about or thought about?
Yeah, I mean, the Harper government, of course, took the very hostile position to the UN statehood bid of the Palestinian Authority, of Abbas, and there was all those threats the conservatives made about expelling Palestinian diplomats from Canada, cutting off Canadian aid to the Palestinians, and I can actually get into that. It's a whole other interesting question there. But basically, you know, tried to really bully the Palestinians out of making this what is ultimately a pretty modest, largely symbolic kind of move.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a bus ticket and there's no bus, right?
Exactly. So the and obviously John Baird went to the UN General Assembly and spoke out against the bid and presented Canada's vote against it. Canada being alongside the U.S., Israel, Czech Republic, Panama, and three other
mighty collection.
Yes, three other countries that are completely dependent upon Washington's money. And so the Quebec legislature passed a unanimous resolution calling on the Canadian government, the conservative government, first of all, praising Palestinian statehood bid and calling on the conservative government to not threaten in response. So I think it's certainly a sign of solidarity at an official level that I think that the pro-Israel groups in Canada would be pretty uncomfortable to see that it was a motion presented from the Foreign Affairs Minister from the Parti Québécois government alongside Amir Kadir from the more left-wing Québec Solidaire. But it was actually supported by all members of the legislature, which I think is a sign that there is a sense that, at least in Quebec, and I think more generally across the country, as a recent CBC poll suggested, that there is a real sort of the extremeness of Harper's position on this issue is a little makes a lot of people uncomfortable. I think that the Harper government, the bullying, the voting against everything. I don't know if people saw. They also voted against a recent call for a couple of days after the statehood bid, a call for a nuclear-free Middle East. And that's obviously because...
Now, by the way, that's an amazing phenomenon. Was it the same voting numbers or like same states, et cetera?
Yeah, it was the same voting numbers, I believe. I think, no, maybe it was actually only six. There was only six countries that opposed the nuclear-free Middle East. I mean, maybe one of those... Either Panama or Czech Republic, or both, maybe voted for it. But basically, every country in the world except the U.S., Canada, Israel, and a couple of those small island countries,
Marshall Islands,
the Marshall Islands, Palau and Micronesia.
Are we still punching above our weight, the Marshall Islands?
It was amazing how the dominant media basically didn't cover that. There was a CBC article. My dad pointed out there was a CBC article on it, and there was hundreds and hundreds of comments or people supporting the comments that were critical of the conservative government on it. But the CBC sort of had it buried on their website, and I did a little search, and I didn't see it in any of the newspapers. It was online in a few of the newspapers, but here you have the Harper government going around saying, we have to cut off diplomatic relations, we have to sanction Iran, we have to all this stuff because of their supposed nuclear program.
And perhaps attack them.
Perhaps attack them. I would actually argue that it already is a sort of low-level attack, but, attack them even further, and all under the guise of their possible nuclear weapons program. Here you have a call for a nuclear-free Middle East that's being supported by the countries of the region. Iran is supported, and the conservative government opposed that because, of course, it's not a possible nuclear weapons program in the case of Israel. It is a known significant stockpile that Israel does not want the International Atomic Energy Agency and to have anything to do with, and doesn't want to join the non-proliferation treaty. So we oppose that.
Just phenomenal. This is Eve Engler and the Tai'i.ca, an article today, Canada as Global Bully, the Congo example, and of course is the author of The Ugly Canadian, Stephen Harper's Foreign Policy. Just last question, Eve, with this NATO thing. I keep in the back of my mind hearing George Washington tell his fellow Americans after they won independence, he says, we should have entangling alliances with nobody. NATO is a deeply entangled alliance. Shouldn't we be debating in the parliament the transfer of weapons to the Syrian border, which might involve us in fighting?
Yeah. I mean, we certainly should be debating it, but the media portrayal of what's gone on in Syria has been so one-sided that Assad bad and rebels good that you can't even really discuss these things because the whole role of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, in terms of delivering weapons and money, the role of the U.S. and France and others, and Turkey in terms of kind of organizing the opposition and consolidating them and directing to whatever extent. It's all a little unclear just to what degree, but nevertheless, significant degree. That hasn't been discussed in any way. So it's hard to have that discussion, and basically it seems like the NATO is gearing up to take a further step in the mm-hmm. if they think the rebels are going to the opposition's going to win or get close to winning, they want to be doing as much in terms of directing them, in terms of having influence over over post Assad Syria, and I think that's what they're setting up for right now.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I took the most serious sign of a possible war was that Angelina Jolie showed up at a Syrian refugee camp in Turkey. Eve Engler, it's great to talk to you, and it's a great book, The Ugly Canadian. Thanks an awful lot.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye bye. That's Eve Engler. And also the article about Rwanda and the Congo is the Tai'i.ca. I got it now. And it's today's edition.